This week's guest is Kenneth Mandel, the CEO of Layer Bio. Ken is an MD, PhD, who is developing a unique drug delivery technology that was spun out of MIT. Let's listen in.
Morning, everybody. This is Dr. Hassan Sadri, board-certified ophthalmologist here in Newport Beach, California. I'm also the co-founder and general partner of Visionary Ventures, which is located here in Aliso Viejo, California, led by my good friend Jeff Weinhoff, who's our managing partner. I'm absolutely delighted and super excited to have Ken Mandel here with us today. Ken comes to us with an enormous background in eye care and has some unique novel technologies that I'd like to share with you. How are you doing, Ken?
Great, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. So how's everything going? How are you doing with this COVID business?
Well, I'd say we're fortunate in our family and where we're located right now that everything's stable and we're safe and healthy. So I'm glad to say that.
I'm glad to hear that. You know, it's a very challenging time for us practitioners and people in startup world like yourself. We'll touch on that. But really, I'm actually really delighted to have you on. And thanks to Craig, we connected, and I wanted to make sure that the audience, a lot of people know you, but I really want them to kind of get your background and path into ophthalmology. Why ophthalmology? And maybe you can tell the audience a little bit about yourself and how you are where you are.
Sure. So my introduction to ophthalmology began with a really great summer internship at the Wilmer Eye Institute. I've been studying electrical engineering at Tufts as an undergraduate, but grew up in Maryland. And I just had the fortune to be introduced to Eugene Dewan, and he invited me to join the MAD lab, the Microsurgical Advanced Design Lab, for the summer. And it was, I think, at a really interesting time for them, because not only did I get to work with Gene, but Mark Humayun was there, and Robert Greenberg, and then also Alex Walsh. And you know, these are all, I would say, now leaders and innovators in the field of ophthalmology, and I had a really rich experience working with them.
That's terrific. So how did you actually meet Gene? Gene, as you know, is a tour de force in ophthalmology, well-known. For those of you who don't know Gene Dewan, he's had numerous novel technologies that have actually exited in ophthalmology successfully. How did you guys connect?
So I'm an engineer by training, and Alex Walsh is also an engineer by training. And his father happened to have been the chair of urology at Johns Hopkins at the time. And I was doing some cancer research in that department. And we just kind of connected, just based on the project I was working on. And he said, urology is interesting, but I think you'll really like ophthalmology. And basically invited me to join him.
That's wonderful. It's for those of you listening and you're in the startup world or trying to start a startup and you're an entrepreneur, listen to what that is. These little connections at a young age, you never know where it's going to go, right? I mean, would you agree with that?
Yeah, I'd say that, in this business and really just in any career, you never know which of these connections is going to turn out to be very influential in the future. And I'd say that I've been fortunate to have met some of these people at a stage where it helped me get into this field.
So what's really fascinating about you is you worked with Dr. Guyton, who's a very well-known pediatric specialist. And this is after college. So you kind of got the ophthalmology bug, right? And you went from engineering now from, Johns Hopkins. Boom, you went to work with Guyton. Is that what happened?
Yeah, when I decided to apply to medical school and take my tests to enter medical school, I spent a year working with Dr. Guyton on a diagnostic device for pediatric vision screening that is now in production in another startup company.
That's absolutely wonderful. And then hence Emory did the combined MD PhD program, which is really, really coveted and difficult to get into. Is that the MSTP program then? Is that what's now called MSTP?
Or what we call
the combined program? Okay.
Yeah,
What made you go to after the PhD? Was it your love for the clinical research aspects and laboratory work?
I would say that I was drawn at the time to biomedical engineering still, and there was this great combined program with Georgia Tech that just really appealed to me.
Got it. And then you met Hank, another great, well-known specialist in ophthalmology, co-founder of Clearside. Tell us about that. So what'd you guys work on there?
Well, I've done basic science like you would in your PhD. And as I was finishing, I really wanted to go into ophthalmology. And so I just sought out somebody who was doing really, high quality ophthalmology research, which was Hank. And he looked at some of the data I had with specific adhesion molecules that I was studying. And he said, we could do some really interesting experiments with the corneal endothelium and the RPE just to see how these molecules work in the eye. And so that's kind of what led us to work together.
So tell us about Layer Bio now. Tell us about the products and pipeline.
Sure. So Layer Bio was formed about 5 years ago as a spin out from MIT. And at the beginning, we were focused on a specific layered coating technology for drug delivery. One of the applications that we had explored early on was coating an intraocular lens for drug delivery. And as we continued to develop that technology, we recognized some limitations of coatings just in terms of their durability and also the total drug loading you could get on an intraocular lens. And I came up with this ring idea. It's basically a tiny elastic ring that can fit onto the haptic of any one-piece or three-piece IOL. And it's compatible with the standard of care. So it goes right into the injector with the lens. It unfolds properly. It's easy to position in the eye. So there's no effect on the surgeon's ability to center it or position it inside the capsular bag. And it also doesn't impart any untoward effects to the eye after it's inserted. So, we've completed recently a phase 1 study showing that it's safe and effective and usable in cataract surgery. So that's the current status of what we're working on. From a concept point of view, there's, definitely a need for alternatives to topical eye drops. And we believe that putting medications to manage post-op complications, putting that right on an intraocular lens is a very reasonable alternative to eye drops because it enhances compliance, has potential to reduce complications, and it's also just improves the quality of life and experience for the patient when they undergo cataract surgery.
In the United States, when we're doing cataract surgery and the patient shows up and says, which drops? I actually had one yesterday. We actually start preoperative drops 2 days before because of the very issue you just mentioned, because people, not so much because of any clinical validity, but because of just mechanics, make sure they go to the pharmacy, make sure they actually get the proper medications, they actually know how to do it because their questions will come up. So yesterday, I'm literally, the patient is being wheeled in the OR and she's like, what drops are you talking about? And so this is a very, very big problem in our world because outcomes, as you know, is based on ocular inflammation and any possible complications. And so this is a really near and dear thing that I think a lot of surgeons, especially myself, I think patients would find benefit from it. It's a huge unmet need. So funding to date, tell us what's going on with was it hard during COVID to get funding? I know you did a small funding round with friends and family. That's what most entrepreneurs do. What has that been like?
So under COVID, I think, I would say that, at the beginning of the year, we were in discussions with potential partners and also some potential early stage investors. And I think there's just been, over the past few months, a general refocus on existing program deadlines and priorities for the existing products. So some things have quieted down on the fundraising front, but we've continued to focus on a lot of the operational goals that we had. And so in general, we've been able to just move forward, as we had planned. We were fortunate to receive a $3 million grant from the Department of Defense to help us advance our lead product into phase 2 studies. So, that was another thing that just happened to come through at the right time and gave us a little bit more runway right now.
That's great. Tell us about the, you know, lessons now you've heard, you learn along the pathway, you know, part of the reason that I think we do this is really to give back to entrepreneurs to starting the pathway. What are your some key points that you would say that you've learned? And are there any books or seminars or any of those things that you would advise?
I tend to buy a lot of those books and then I read the first chapter and then for whatever reason, I don't get through them very often. So I would say that, you know, almost all of my advice comes from personal experience and interaction with some of the mentors and people I mentioned before. You know, I'm a big fan of surrounding myself with advisors who are enthusiastic and believe in what I'm working on, but are also, you know, very direct and honest about their reservations or concerns about the path we're taking. And I think it's good to, you know, both, you know, have people around you who are supporting what you're doing, but are also equally objective and can give you constructive advice. So, you know, that is, yep.
Absolutely. So I know it sounds obvious, but you need advisors that are not going to be afraid of the CEO and really be able to say, hey, listen, we're not moving the right path. So that's, for those of you listening, that's huge advice. And I think, tell us about perseverance. I mean, you know, that's a big quality, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I was describing how during the, you know, recent COVID epidemic, some of the, you know, fundraising climate changed, then we, you know, just decided to focus more on internal, you know, operational goals, which was very effective. You know, these types of cycles happen, you know, in general, you know, in the field of business. And I think it's important to be able to find ways to move the project forward through alternative mechanisms of funding or in-kind collaborations or other things you can do so that eventually you can reach your goal.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So what are some other things you think are pretty important that you had mentioned when we were offline in your notes that you think maybe reserve some dry powder, not so much make a big, huge marketing splash. What are some pitfalls that you would advise younger entrepreneurs?
Yeah. I mean, so I think one thing you mentioned is helpful. You could go into business kind of looking in from the outside at how other businesses have developed a big brand, or, you know, they have an appearance of having a very large team or staff. But when you're an entrepreneur and you're trying to be capital efficient, you learn which things you probably can wait to spend money on till later and really just focus your resources on collecting the data you need to get to the next milestone. And I think that's probably one of the most important things is if you focus on getting good data, the other things will follow as a result of that.
So, you know, as you're talking about this and you're kind of developing the OcuRing, you know, when you're sort of going through, obviously there's a huge unmet need, it's about 4.4 million cataracts done in the US, you know, call it, that's going to grow another, you know, with the baby boomers, it's going to be 6 million, not too far distant future, is about 10,000-11,000 people coming out of workforce, and you know, retirement is huge baby boom, and, you know, less number of ophthalmologists, and cost is always a barrier of entry, right, for branded products. What are some things that you think, that obviously there's an unmet need, right, but when you peel back the layers, what are some other not so much obvious barriers you think that are specific to OcuRing?
Sure. And it's a really good question because, you know, there are reasons why perhaps solutions like this have not advanced further than the research stage previously. I think some are technical and, you know, we were able to, as I described before, overcome some of the limitations of you know, prior products in this class in that we were able to get good drug loading with good controlled release on an IOL and do it in a way that doesn't affect the standard of care. So, you know, part of it was technical, but really another obstacle is always reimbursement and you know, how the product will be paid for. You know, we know right now that, you know, there are issues with drugs that are considered part of a surgical procedure and reimbursed under Medicare Part B. There's a very shiny and attractive option of the pass-through payments that occur during the first 3 years. But due to the packaging that occurs after that, you can have a steep drop in your price that can make it very hard to continue to sell your product. And you know, there was recently a white paper submitted to Congress by MedPAC that discussed how there will be hopefully some considerations given to specialized products that have an advantage over, say, eye drops or the existing standard of care. I think it could open that up to having specialized pricing for new products such as this. The second part that we've discussed with a lot of ophthalmologists is the possibility for a cash pay option right now that would be, you know, approximately the same price as copays for eye drops. So it wouldn't be an economic you know, hardship for a patient. It would simply be a like for like type of exchange where they could have our Ocuring instead of an eye drop.
Mm-hmm. That's intriguing. Are there regulatory things that you have to consider there as far as, you know, getting that approved, or is that a easier regulatory pathway?
Do you mean regulatory in terms of reimbursement or just in terms of
both? Both as far as, well, the data, and also when you're going to go, you know, to CMS, how do you, are there, what are some pitfalls there? Because I've never heard of that, and that's actually really intriguing. Actually a really good idea.
Well, you know, this approach is still in its early stages, and you know, I've been advised by multiple experts that this is something that's possible. On the other hand, you know, as you pointed out, we might be one of very few examples where people have tried to do this so far and been successful. So, you know, we have to really still learn more about how CMS would view a product like this.
Yeah, but I like how you're thinking along already. For those of you listening, you know, you have to have a short-term and a long-term goal, and you have to troubleshoot your long-term. Obviously, you don't know you have all the answers, but you have a target. And I think, you know, based on what we've seen in the recent years with decreasing reimbursements and consolidation, there's a tremendous amount, would you agree, of opportunity to reduce the burden of the highest, most expensive person who's an ophthalmologist to see these patients. And maybe there is another way of maybe using mid-levels, or if they're stable, they have less visits. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. And it's even more critical in parts of our country or other parts of the world where the ratio of doctors to patients is lower, and they may not, patients may not be able to get the level of follow-up that they would get in a premier clinic in the U.S.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I feel like I was on an agency phone call with another company that's actually looking at glaucoma space, slow release. And I got the sense that there's really a lot of, like, sort of have high bandwidth and sort of, you know, if sort of they're aficionados of this problem, solving this problem, because they're probably hearing it from their constituents and, you know, from Congress and also the consumers. And I do think that you're in a great space from a personal standpoint, because if you look at, like, for instance, glaucoma, huge burden, cost burden, you know, also barriers of entry of patients using their medications. It's a blinding disease as well. And there's been, you know, multiple products from multiple competitors in this space, and they're looking at that. And I think that slow release, if you will, category, if you want to call it, both in postoperative inflammation, but also in other areas, is pretty exciting. And I think what I get the sense, at least today in 2020, I don't know if it's COVID, maybe that's part of it, but also just what we've talked about, I think there's an opportunity there. So that's a really good space to be in. Would you agree with that?
Yes. And, you know, one other, I guess, comment I'd want to add is, you know, this isn't necessarily a replacement for existing eye drops for existing indications, but by putting a drug, a sustained release drug, inside the eye, we may do better at preventing cystoid macular edema after cataract surgery, or perhaps, you know, the microdosing inside the capsule may be helpful at preventing secondary cataract, PCO. So there may be entirely new indications that we can unlock with a technology like this.
Very good. Very good. You know, it's been a pleasure to have you on today. I could talk to you for another hour or two because I have a ton of clinical questions, but we'll probably do that offline. but are there any parting words you want to tell a young Ken Mandel, let's say that was in Wilmer or starting out and has this great idea, back of a napkin, what would you tell him?
Well, I think there's sort of, there's two parts to it. You know, earlier I said it's important to, you know, listen to your advisors and find people who can give you constructive feedback. But at the end of the day, I found that no one's actually going to tell you what the right decision is. And I think that, you know, I've gradually kind of gained the confidence to make certain decisions myself based on a balance of input from other people. And it took me, you know, time to really develop that, that ability. You know, and I think another part is, you know, that's along those lines is just, you know, having a general belief in what you're doing is really important. And you could spend time on lots of different things, but I would suggest spending time on the things that you think are most important.
That's really good advice. Focus.
Yes.
In a world of instant gratification.
Yes.
And distraction. Yeah, that's a challenge. I mean, you know, to your point, I mean, I see the next generation even worse. You know, people are puzzled by this millennial sort of mindset, but I think your kids are going to be more challenged because, you know, this technology of distraction, if you will, which is a whole nother discussion, is and the antithesis of a successful entrepreneur who needs to have laser focus. And I think I would echo what you're saying. If whoever that I've seen, like entrepreneurs, whether it's, you know, we've companies we've funded or just people I've worked as a KOL with, and the ones that are successful are just absolutely maniacally focused on their craft and what they have to do. And everything else is just basically filtered. And that's really good advice. So it's been a pleasure, Ken. I look forward to chatting with you again soon.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us for another episode. Stay tuned next week when Dr. Sadri is joined by the one and only Dick Lindstrom, who shares the twist of fate which led him into ophthalmology. And don't forget to sign up for the Dry Eye Innovation Showcase being held on August 20th. Visit OIS.net and register today.